Have you ever started a Game of Thrones podcast that is about watching HBO and reading books, then suddenly do a mailbag episode that gets a lot of downloads in the middle of a down television season that precipitates another mailbag episode, this time tied to the theme of romance because it's close to Valentine's Day, and suddenly you're a media critic giving personal advice or finally delving into weird parts of your past because someone asked about Buffy and Angel's relationship? This week that happens. It's Romancing the Storm on Storm of Spoilers. Hello and welcome to Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and the creepiest romantic gesture in movies is when Nicolas Cage asks Meg Ryan what a peach tastes like to her in City of Angels.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and the creepiest romantic gesture in all of cinema is when John Cusack does not respect Ione Skye's boundaries and stands with a boombox outside of her window.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my creepiest romantic gesture, not mine, I didn't do this, is when Olivia Newton-John's Sandy completely changes her entire personality to fit the idealized version of a babe in her boyfriend's eyes at the end of Grease, because that's stupid. Don't do that.
Sprays on those tight
pants. I mean,
they had to literally sew Olivia Newton-John into those pants.
As a person who saw this in his formative years, I appreciate the gesture. But as a feminist, I'm not for it.
Well, don't you know it's like they're writing off at the end because she's dead? Because she never saved in the beginning of Summer
Love. Is that a theory?
We could do a terrible fan theory episode, but I can't get into this right now. I can't talk about this right now.
I didn't even know this was a thing. I can't wait for this other episode we're going to do.
The Grease episode will be a future episode, but this week we're all going to get together and answer some of your romantic questions in like another mailbag episode to prepare you for Valentine's Day, which is totally not a made-up holiday. It's a real holiday that we're celebrating this week on Star Wars Spoilers. But first, Joanna, do we have any reviews?
Yes. First, I want to explain to our dear listeners who might follow me on Twitter that I have decided, because everything is terrible, that I am decided to break my sobriety for February and drink through this episode. So I hope you can hear this. That's the sound of both the bottles that I'm drinking from. I will drink every time a question gets too real is the drinking
game. Oh, God.
I decided to play for this episode. But first, a review, and there's an accent request. Okay. This is from Stephanie Deal, 5 stars. Like a weekly lunch date with friends. Storm of Spoilers hosts have sharp insights that each share their differing thoughts without stepping on each other. I hopped on board for the Game of Thrones, but the off-season tour has been a delight. It further cemented my love for Hamilton. I recommend listening to episodes featuring properties you're not familiar with. That's how I discovered the Box Trolls, Joanna's wreck from the Laika episode. I look forward to the gang every week. Also, several weeks ago, Neil half lamented that one host of a certain political podcast is everybody's podcast boyfriend. Since Valentine's Day is right around the corner, let it be known that I consider Neil to be my podcast boyfriend. Keep up the great work, buddies. Should Joanna choose to read my review, go hard with a strong Minnesotan accent. Mine is not stereotypical level, but I'd be lying if I said it doesn't exist.
I want to hear her say Box Trolls in that accent now. I didn't know I liked that so much.
I don't know if that was a Minnesota accent.
We need Fargo to catch up with modern day movies so that we can hear that.
Ooh, a Box Trolls.
What are these?
So cute.
So there you go, Neil. Happy Valentine's
Day.
Wow,
thanks. I accept.
I like that.
I guess.
I like 5-star reviews. I was listening to a previous mailbag episode, which I believe is the episode that I was telling people that you could even be angry at us under 5-star reviews, and I'm going to find that totally valid.
Was it Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm just saying they don't have to be angry. That was obviously much more pleasant.
I'm trying to remember who the political... Is it Jody?
Yeah, it's Jody Avergan.
Oh, it is Jody.
He is. He's everybody's podcast boyfriend.
I listened to him this week, and my heart fluttered in my chest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Instead of surviving through it. Well, Neil, you've rebranded your section of the podcast this week. Not because we're not going to talk about Game of Thrones at all, but because there's other things that we need to talk about that we've maybe talked about before.
Right. One of the things that we don't get a chance to do a lot of is go back and talk about some of the off-season tour things that may be developing. So this section is now called We Talked About This Before, and it will include Game of Thrones. So, but there are a few interesting things that harken back to some of our previous topics. One is that I read a theory today about the OA, and Britt Marling... apparently, she talked in an interview about how fans had sort of figured something out in... Apparently, when she, when her character, Prairie, is in the FBI office, there's like a Braille readout. And it's like letters and numbers, but if you use the numbers as the corresponding letter in the alphabet, it comes out to say Rachel.
What?
Which was the only person that did not get...
Is what Joanna would say if she remembered who Rachel was from our description.
Wait, is Rachel, like, the unoriginal angel?
Well, no. So Rachel was the only the only member of the captured clan, the dance crew, that didn't get a move. So she was
what?
The only one that wasn't, like, an angel.
She was, like, the town from Footloose?
Sure. So this goes to people's thinking of whether or not what Prairie was telling people was true or not. I don't think it answers any of that, but it is interesting that there are like little Easter eggs in there that sort of suggest that those other characters that Prairie talks about really existed instead of being part of like her imagination.
Well, so... Also, does this suggest that the FBI knew something about Rachel, right? Because isn't this in, like, the FBI office?
Yeah.
So, I think you sent a link to this, and then I sort of, like, tried to internet find things around it, and people are even going as far as to assuming that Rachel was some sort of plant, and the whole, it was just her traumatic experience comes from planted books, which is why Riz Ahmed's in her house when he shouldn't be. And we all, I guess we're going to find out because we're going to get a second season of this. It was confirmed this week.
Yeah, they released a teaser.
Woot.
So there's that.
Yep, it's going to be OA-tastic because it looks like we're going back.
But in bad
Actually,
news,
you know what?
wait, hold on. In bad news that's related to this, wait, give me a second. Give me just a second to figure this out, which is that Netflix announced today, along with saying that the OA is coming back for a second season, that they're releasing 1,000 hours of new content in 2017, which a colleague of mine calculated to be 41 days. So, F you, Netflix. I want my life back.
Yeah.
There goes our lives. Well, speaking of teasers for more Netflix content, did you guys watch the Super Bowl?
Listen, I did watch the Super Bowl. I did see the Stranger Things teaser. I was like, well, this is fine. But then I was reading this lovely website, Thrillist.com, and this great writer, Dave Gonzalez, I don't know if you've heard of him, did an exhaustive frame-by-frame breakdown of the trailer, which you might want to go check out on Thrillist.com. And it blew my tiny mind. So
that sounds pretty correct. I had a similar experience with this Dave Gonzalez color.
Don't you think people should go click on that article?
I do. You would almost, I think it's great. You could almost say that that's why I brought it up. This is what synergy looks like.
I didn't know that that's why Neil brought it up. I thought I was being very like conscientious shill for my friend, but I didn't know.
No, it's good. Basically, what I've learned is say film school rejects is better than sex every week, and Neil just keeps kicking karma back at me.
Word. All right, cool. So the Stranger Things teaser is out there. Go read Dave's piece on it. There is a piece of Game of Thrones news, and it is that Emilia Clarke has wrapped on season 7, while other characters continue to film. Does this mean Daenerys is dead?
Yep.
No. Yeah,
only one of you is taking this as seriously as I had hoped.
You're so adorable. The word is they're all wrapping this month. So, like, everyone might be done, you know, by Friday. We don't know. So the fact that Emilia Clarke is done either a few days or a couple weeks before some of her co-stars doesn't really concern me in any way.
The more operative information is that Emilia Clarke is free to go on to other things now. The other things that she's doing is going to be in the Han Solo movie as a character who is a human, as far as we know. And earlier today, on this day of recording, we're recording this on a Wednesday, we learned from, was it Heroic Hollywood?
Yes, heroichollywood.com.
Said that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who we've talked about when we talked about the show Fleabag.
Who I believe is like my TV girlfriend and Neil, our TV Valentine.
Right. She's the TV girlfriend that Joanna set me up with. She is going to be joining the cast of the Han Solo movie. And do we know anything about her character yet? Or have any ideas of who she may play?
Dave?
I've heard it's not human. It's going to be either an entirely CGI character or a CGI-assisted character, which could be an alien or droid.
Got it.
And, like, we were discussing this off-air, and we kind of feel like she might be droid. Like, she's so tall and angular. She seems very droidy, like, you know. So
she's either C-3PO or some sort of flea-infested... I mean, I just there's no way that she could be an alien and mean not to think, oh, Fleabag. Anyway,
it's really annoying
that joke didn't work.
It's really annoying that Neil said C-3PO because that was a joke I was struggling to make off air and didn't land. And Neil just like dropped it like a silk scarf. I was like, C-3PO. I like forgot a syllable, but Neil was just like, here it is, smooth as silk.
All credit to that joke goes to Joanna.
No, you workshopped it until it was the right joke. I was like, ugh. All right,
and the last bit of, we talked about this before news, is you guys talked about watching Legion a couple weeks back, correct? I had not seen any of it yet. I recently watched the first three episodes, which start this week. They've already started by the time you're listening to this. It's amazing. It's super good. Very David Lynchy. And if you'd like to hear my long form thoughts, I wrote a piece on filmschoolrejects.com about how it is the evolution of superhero TV. Get it? Because it's mutants and stuff.
I do.
Na, 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 na.
We are going to, spoiler alert on Storm of Spoilers, we will be doing a Legion-esque episode in a little bit. So don't even bother asking for it, guys. It's already coming.
Yeah. We have X things to talk about. Because, you know, X can give it to you or whatever that song is.
Oh, man. Yes, I do get to use that song for that episode. Perfect.
And one more quick note before we move on. We need folks to take another survey. You guys know the drill at this point. We are actually, I am told, in competition with some of the other Wondery shows to see who can get the most surveys. And don't want to make anybody look bad, but I'm pretty sure we could dominate this as a Storm of Spoilers family.
This is like fighting in the War Room and the Billions podcast. Like, now that we have a nemesis, things are going, whatever.
Our nemesis are all of our co-podcast sponsors.
Yes. Our friends. But also our mortal enemies, so, if there's like a trophy of some kind on the line.
Right. So help us win this friendly competition by going to Wondery.com/survey. It's Wondery.com/survey. And that's the last update that I have. Let's do some other stuff. All right, cool. So we got the romance, the mailbag this week. A couple things to preface this with. I went through and I read every question so that you guys know. We are probably not going to answer every question because some of them are super long and we just don't have like 7 hours. So we had to.
And that's okay if you wrote a really long email. It's okay. But we might not get.
They're all fantastic. And you guys are sharing with us things that we did not expect. So there's that. But we've selected these questions because they fit the amount of time I want to spend, and it's a pretty good variety of interesting questions. Now, first, before I get into the first question, this question comes from Elizabeth. And she had asked slash requested that someone do a Kathleen Turner voice, since our episode is called Romancing the Storm and it's based on Romancing the Stone. I don't know what the Kathleen Turner voice sounds like. Like, I can't place it among, I mean, not to say that I've never seen anything with Kathleen Turner in it, but is there a Kathleen Turner, like, voice?
I mean, my answer is going to be really unsatisfying, maybe, so let me try to re-spin it. Okay, yes, I can't do it, but it does exist. I used to work at a restaurant that Kathleen Turner lived above for a period of time, and she my job was to take the orders off the telephone, so it would be my job to deal with Kathleen Turner at various levels of being awake or sober. Ordering things that were not on the menu and sort of meeting her halfway. So, yes, there's a Kathleen Turner voice. I could still sort of hear it in the back of my head sometimes, wondering why we don't have baked potatoes. But I can't actually do it.
All right, so moving on to Elizabeth's actual question. She has two. One, how do each of you value, in order of importance, sex, love, or romance, be it in a relationship or when seeking one? Note that relationship could be a casual fling, friends with benefits, or something in the long haul. So how do you rank them? Sex, love, romance.
I'll go.
No, go ahead, Joanna. You go first.
I would say number one, love, because that's the thing that lasts. Number two, sex. Number three, romance.
Agree.
Okay.
I agree with that lineup. That was a good lineup.
Thanks.
Wait, I think mine might be different.
What's yours?
Go for it.
So what are we defining as romance, I guess? Romance is just overt gestures?
Like, yeah, just sort of like, oh, he gets me flowers, or oh, he buys me jewelry, or like whatever. But I guess it could be more mundane than that, like, oh, he did the dishes for me, or, you know, like whatever it is. And I know we're dealing with different, like, gender roles here. Like, guys, I think, are trained usually not to care about romance, like, by society. But you can disagree, Neil. If you are, like, a romantic feller and you want to prize that higher, let me know.
No, I think mine actually might be the same. If you, I don't know. Maybe romance is a little higher. Romantic gestures and whatnots. I don't know.
So love, romance, sex?
No. No.
Sex, romance, love?
Yeah, there we go. That's a good one.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I'm not emotionally prepared to talk about this stuff. But
buddy,
here we are.
You should have brought alcohol to this podcast.
Yeah.
Amateur.
Okay, so question two from Elizabeth. If you could be the love interest for any character of any show, still on the air or not, who would it be for? We'll start with Dave.
Larissa Olenek's Alex Mack.
Nice.
In that time period, except I would be maybe 2 years older than I was at the time. Not older than her, just about the same age.
Love it.
All right.
Me?
Yeah.
Ben Wyatt, Parks and Recreation.
Oh, dope. That's a good one. Ben Wyatt would probably be in my top 10 for sure. I'm going to use this as an excuse to talk about a current show that's coming back, Netflix's Love, which is the show starring Paul Rust and Gillian Jacobs. But it's neither one of those two. It is actually the character Birdie, who plays
the Australian roommate. I love her.
She's the best. Like, she's just the best. I've been watching a little bit of season two because they said screeners, and it's coming out, I think, next week. And it really does seal it for me that Birdie is the character of my dreams.
I started your answer, like when you started your answer, I was very alarmed because I was like, I love Gillian Jacobs, but like that character is garbage,
a psychopath.
So I was like, Neil, aim higher. But like Birdie is very, very good choice. So
also, I mean, it wouldn't be, based on my track record in life, would not be surprising if I ended up with the Gillian Jacobs character from Love. So there's that. But anyway, watch Love. It's a very charming show that not enough people watch, although enough people watched it to get a second season on Netflix, which who knows what that means.
Well, they have to fill 44 days every year.
They only get 1,000 hours.
Might
of
not be a low bar.
All right. So this next one is mainly just for Joanna. It's from Catherine. Wondering where Joanna falls on the Buffy Angel versus Buffy Spike debate.
Okay, guys, this is really cute because before we started recording, Neil was like, this will be a simple yes or no A or B answer. It's not.
Of course it's not.
The answer is Spike. And I'm just going to say, I have just a few bullet points. Number one, all you Angel lovers out there, remember that Angel left her for no reason other than David Boreanaz wanted a spinoff in season 3. So Angel's on my shit list for that, for leaving her for no reason. Giles also left her for no reason. Every guy is garbage on that show. Spike, a lot of the Angel lovers will critique Spike because there is an episode where he like sexually assaults her and it's like very bad. Attempts to sexually assault her. What I will point out is Spike did not have his soul at that point. And Angel did far worse when he didn't have his soul, when he was Angelus. And Spike stopped himself and then went and volunteered to get a soul because he felt so bad about that time that he tried to have sex with Buffy and she didn't want it. So anyway, point being, Team Spike all the way, platinum, blonde, wonder god, the end.
Cool. Dave, do you have a preference?
I can't disagree with that, but I do remember the first time my family was going through Buffy and got to the whole like Buffy Angel soul sex switch, and really thinking that was a clever way to deal with I think both sides of really weird teenage sexuality.
It was.
'Cause
I think that's the smartest, like, of all the like labored metaphors that Joss Whedon has put into his work, that is his best. And I was like the same age as Buffy when that happened, so I was like, "What? Oh my god!" It meant a lot to me. So I agree. That's like that's maybe Buffy's best plot twist. But is Angel maybe the best choice? Really?
It was always one of my favorite tropes, and then like it still remains like a trope of mine that I like personally. It's the same reason I like it, the Michael Fassbender Shame. Is like there's a part of like every young boy that's like, you know, closing his erection in the fridge and not knowing why, because you're just like this weird sex monster that like is confused and like angry all the time. And so any sort of fiction that could, you know, at least show that it happens and is confusing, I think to both sides is good.
Wow. All right.
It was a fridge door thing.
This
weird.
Is my favorite episode of our podcast already.
I mean, to be honest, I don't really have a preference between these because I haven't watched enough Buffy. I was just more of always an Angel and Bones fan. So there's that.
Mm.
That's a joke. That was
my
Bones
mom.
Joke. Anyway. Moving on to the next question. This one comes from Brian, and the question is, what's your favorite television romance or couple of all time? Joanna.
So I have to start because like I'm just like, oh, it's Leslie Knope and Ben Wyatt, and I can't just recycle answers. So let me think about it while you guys.
Okay.
That's a good answer.
That is a really good
thing.
Answer.
Everybody's answer is going to be a good answer.
What do you got, Dave?
Oh, no, wait. I have my answer.
All right. Never mind.
Sorry. It's not romance. It's like the best relationship. And hopefully this isn't stepping on any other question similar, but it's got to be Coach and Mrs. Coach from Friday Night Lights.
Oh, that's a good one too. Coach.
Okay, that's my favorite in terms of like I still think that's going on somewhere and they moved to Pennsylvania and he's coaching football and she's an administrator and like that's just headcanon for all time.
Right.
But that being said, I through like a period of time in my life when How I Met Your Mother was good, was a big Marshall and Lily fan in terms of the ways that they figured out how to deal with things in their romance after that one time Lily left to go to art school and caused like season two to happen.
Because but, like, Allison Hannigan decided... was like pregnant or whatever, right? Isn't that why they had to do that?
I don't remember what the
reason
was.
No, I think that's
was.
Like late. That's later on they have to write her out because she's pregnant and Barney just tells a joke that's so bad that she walks away. Like she walks off the show for like four episodes.
Okay.
But I think the she goes to San Francisco one is the season one to season two cliffhanger, just because they were supposed to be like this unbreakable couple, and then you know she comes back, has like a different hairdo, they have to like get back together. But once they get back together, they're sort of like a rock of the series, and even though they have like problems, they have ways of dealing with it. And I don't know if they're like my favorite television romance of all time, but they were definitely one that I invested a lot in, and like. Would talk about with people.
Wow, we're also practical.
I know, we're like the people who get together and then they're together forever, not like, oh, the burning passionate, will they, won't they, like, you know.
Right. Anyway. Mine, also very practical, is from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh.
And it's not the one you think, maybe. I don't know.
Is it a Dama?
God, it is the one you think. It is Admiral William Adama and President Laura Roslin. Because it's a sweet, pragmatic relationship that forms over time. Yeah, and they're adorable humans and they save humanity. So, like, what's more romantic than saving all of humanity?
I love it. Yeah, I love all of our answers.
Can I flip this?
Flip it.
Can somebody, like, let's just pick a bad one, if, or, like, your least favorite.
Like so, Ross like, and Rachel?
That
or?
Season of Homeland where the daughter, like, hits a guy in the car because she wants to, like, drive around with the senator's, like, son.
Or that time that Landry killed a guy to protect Tyra.
There's another bad one.
Or like on It's Always Sunny with Charlie and what's her name? What's the?
I actually have a controversial answer to this, which is Jim and Pam.
Jim and Pam are a tough one.
Like Tim and Dawn from the original Office is like kisses, fingertips, mwah, perfect. Jim and Pam, the problem is they had like. What, 8 seasons? I don't know. Too much time. And so they had to do this like terrible. I mean, if you listen to my old podcast Station Agents, you know my feelings on this. They had this terrible end of the series thing where they like tried to stir up trouble in Jim and Pam's marriage. And it just like, it soured me on the entire thing. So as much as I love Jenna Fischer and John Krasinski, and as much as I loved the beginning of that, that is a ruined television romance for me.
Oh, and she just got back into Chili's this week.
I mean, bless her for that. And also bless John Krasinski for tweeting about it. He's like, finally. I mean, that's adorable. But fuck Jim and Pam at the end. Okay.
I will say this, though. The Office did have good couples. Like, Dwight and Angela was awesome.
I'm more into, like, yeah. Michael and, I don't know, Amy Ryan's character's name. But, like, the fact that they found someone who was, like, perfect for Michael Scott... was so lovely.
Holly Flax.
That was lovely. I rewatched his proposal recently. I don't remember why, with like all the candles, stuff like that. And I just like, I cried. It was so good.
Nice. All right. So this next one gets into a little bit more advice. And this comes from Christy. The question is, how do you coax your significant other into watching media they would otherwise never be interested in? She says, my fiance and I have fairly divergent pop culture preferences, and we often have a hard time finding something we both will enjoy. So we'll start with Dave. How do you get your lady friend?
So my girlfriend basically doesn't like anything. That
yeah, you run into this a lot, I think.
Yeah, what we have in common is we like art and we like the idea, at least, of film, and we're starting to like certain things about television. But that means, outside of that, almost nothing in common. She likes period pieces. She likes Frontline over other documentaries. Just not the way I would go. So we kind of do a... We do a give and take, and we keep lists of things that are anywhere towards the center of the Venn diagram. So if we happen to see a trailer that we both like, or somebody, you know, brings up a movie that they recently bought or we have access to, we put it on a list or we put it in a pile that becomes, you know, like when we have time to, you know, roll the dice on something new and one of us doesn't have to do comfort media because we had a long day. We'll do something in the middle there. That's how we come across a lot of new things. You know, we go to like your Moonlights or your La La Lands, which things that we would both share. But that's also how I start like the long game like 10 months in advance to get her to the new Star Wars. So I'm about to start with why, you know, episode 8 should be good. But surprisingly, after executing this 10-month-long plan for 2 years in a row, we've now decided that she likes new Star Wars movies. She does not like the old Star Wars movies. So yes, that kills part of me on the inside that might have wanted to not want that to be true. But at least she's buying into new Star Wars and we could meet at that
She's
point.
Not exactly think, reading like, the Expanded Universe books.
Exactly, and doesn't care about them, and that's fine. But I guess for Christy, I'd say if you have this list, you also have to be open to the fact that it's going both ways. So if you're trying to coax them, they're going to start trying to coax you. So you're going to have to watch a lot of costume dramas. And at least what I try to do, that was very specific. At least what I try to do is if you're watching something you don't like, try to get even more specific about what it is about that thing you don't like. Not so you could throw it in the person's face afterwards, but so that you know next time you come around that, like, I really don't like movies where the subplot is about marriage for land. And, you know, I just figured out I didn't like that. And that helps you make co-media decisions in the future. But yeah, I don't know. You're going to be a little uncomfortable before you find that sweet spot in the middle of the Venn diagram.
You should know if, like, any advice that Dave gives you on this podcast is, like, Dave and Java, lovely couple. I like them both enormously.
Real solid advice.
No, but, yes, but Dave also, and Java, I think, both, like, I don't want to say entire, fighting is a part of your romance. Right? This is part of your relationship. Not everyone is comfortable in that kind of relationship, but that's like the kind of relationship that Dave likes, that like friendly fighting arguments and stuff like that. He and Java do that. And so that's not for everyone, but like, right? That's accurate, right? And not unfair to you, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not saying encourage, you know, like discussion, but I definitely think, you know, find your middle ground. And the way I would state it is there's going to be a period where nobody's happy. But that might not be the way that you meet it, like, midway. I don't know. There's so many things that... I was reading something on Twitter today that was talking... I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Jeff. Not important. They were talking about how advertising and PR is such a crapshoot these days that even your perception about something is not necessarily how that thing's going to actually present it once you dig into it. So I'm a big fan, whether or not it's with your significant other or not, of, like, trying some media that makes you uncomfortable every once in a while. But yeah, I don't know. I think if you're the type of people that enjoys having spirited conversations about why you disliked or why you really liked the thing you just saw, it definitely makes it easier to venture into crazy territory that you think you hate.
So I will say a couple things. First of all, there's something to be said for not looking to your significant other to be the person you enjoy all media with. And I don't mean this in a stereotypical, like, girls night out, let's go see this rom-com because my fella won't go with me sort of, like, thing. But, like, no, most, yeah, I would say all of the guys that I've dated have shared pretty tastes that pretty closely aligns with mine. And this might come up in a later question, but, like, that's actually something that's very important to me. And so I look for in someone that, like, someone who enjoys the same things that I do, book wise, film wise, TV wise. Like, I don't know how to relate to someone very well who doesn't. But that being said, nobody I've ever dated has really liked live theater. I love live theater. I've, like, lived almost all my life in the Bay Area, which has really good theater. Not as good as New York, but really good theater. And so I go with my sister. I go with my friends. Like, I've got friends who are really into theater. My sister's really into theater. I have occasionally been able to drag a boyfriend to the theater, but like you don't necessarily enjoy it if you dragged them to it. And so just like be open to the idea that your significant other doesn't have to be the end all be all of you enjoying art, right? That being said, this is probably unhealthy, but in my last most significant relationship, we would sometimes do bets for like things that like if you lose this bet, you have to watch this movie that's really important to me that might not be important to you, but I want you to see it.
Oh, interesting. And how defensive does that make you feel when you win the bet, though?
Because
you actually have to like go through with it. You actually have to like Clockwork Orange, sit them down, and pry their eyelids open. You know, like because they lost.
I don't think it's ever bad because I think it's usually like I don't think we've ever come out of it being like I hated that experience. Like that's how I would watch. I don't know, like Lenny, the Dustin Hoffman film about, you know, Lenny Bruce, which I never would have watched, but like that person really wanted me to watch, or like they watched Philadelphia Story, the Katharine Hepburn, Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant movie, and they liked it, but like, you know, they cracked some jokes about it, but they liked it in the end because like, you know, we have similar tastes. It's just sort of like, I get to pick what were the stakes of these like various bets and stuff like that. So it's just kind of like a fun and lighthearted way. If everyone approaches it with the same attitude, lighthearted way of like, you lost, now we have to watch this. That's just a thing that we used to do. So there you go.
Fascinating.
this is like, wait, I'm going to take a drink. This got too real. All right.
Let's see. Do I have an answer for this question? I think, so here's what you have to do. You have to start a website where you're writing about popular culture. Build it up over
a
period.
Step one, start your own business.
I'm going to say build it up over a period of 5 to 10 years. And then eventually you can just be like, well, this is for work, so we have to watch it. and you always win. no, seriously, though, I feel like maybe I'm just super chill. So I sort of will just go along with whatever. And then I have this thing where I've always been good on my own. So like when that person is not around, I will just watch what I want to watch. Like it doesn't, we don't have to share things because I'm an independent human. So,
but that's also the luxury of our jobs is it's sort of like, well, I can watch this TV show in the middle of the day because it's for work. Right. You know what I mean? Like
it is. So
we're weird.
This
people.
Only applies, like I said, you have to start a website. but I think that I don't think I've ever run into a huge problem because I've always been pretty chill about like, you know, like you said, like you can't drag me to anything. Like I'll just go willingly.
But like, why would you like? What always bothered me, like when I was in, like when I would see guys that I loved go see shit movies because the girl they were dating wanted to see it. And I'm like, it's not even the guy. I was like, why would the girl ever want to drag a guy to like crap, like, or they think it's a great movie, but like, why would you want to drag your boyfriend to that? Like, go see that with your friends who will actually enjoy it maybe. And then like, go to something else with him. Like, I don't mean to be gender normative. This applies to all sorts of couples, but like, and the same with a guy, like, why would you ever want to, or once again, gender normative, why would you ever want to drag a girl to an action movie that she doesn't want to see if she's, you know, going to make shit comments about it? So like, I didn't like, once I was like, we were with a group, but like the three girls in the group were in the A-Team, the Liam Neeson A-Team movie. Three of us did not want to be there. We were real loud vocal shits all through the movie. And those guys were like, you're never coming to movie. And we're like, thank you. Mission accomplished. We don't want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, really not you an know? Ideal situation for anyone.
Yeah, like, why would you do that? Just, like, the guy, I mean, once again, girls can like the A-Team, but if all the guys want to see the A-Team, guys go see the A-Team. Girls go do something else. Or it doesn't have to follow along gender lines. But go see the thing you want to see with someone who's most likely to be on board with you to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's my advice generally.
Don't be so codependent, damn it.
Yeah, well, I have one more quick advice for the codependent people that I found is interesting is put yourself in situations where neither of you know what you're getting into. Film festivals.
Oh, yeah, because then you can be confused
sort of,
together.
Like, weird sampler thing. Yeah, and then, like, that's even better. Like, the best time I think I've had with, like, Java and, like, a theater are, like, premieres or, like, you know, a whole bunch of shorts and being programmed together, because then you're just all in for whatever comes up on the screen. Horror film festivals, well, I mean, she didn't like that as much as I did, but we both enjoyed, you know, the lights come up and you have no idea what's going to go on, so everybody's sort of on equal footing. If you guys
mystery
just like
movies
just like TV,
you could also do mystery movies at home.
Oh, go
ahead. Just like, hey, you're going to pick a mystery movie today and I'm not going to know what it is. I don't know, this is
for
terrible.
Sure. Or if you if you have time, if you have time to also in your schedule to do like television, you could like at the beginning of each season, like you could each pick a show and sort of see if you're all in on that. That's another cool way to sort of discover new things. And that's how I watched like an entire season of Pan Am.
And like whether or not you're, I guess if you're listening to this podcast, my suspicion is you're the kind of person who cares a good deal about pop culture. Like, that's not true of everyone. But for some people, film and television and books and theater and music are, like, the way that they relate to the world. That's true for me, certainly. And so if you're not already, in like, ensconced in a relationship and looking, like, I think it's not a bad criteria to have, because it's the lens through which I interpret the world. So it's important to me, the person that I'm with cares about those things. That's not to say like personalities have to be exactly the same in lockstep, but like that kind of shit. We had a lot of questions, long story short. We had a lot of questions being like, what if I love all this stuff and my partner doesn't? And sometimes that's okay. But like, I'm just saying, if you're looking, I don't think you should discount this as a criteria necessarily for looking for a good partner. Like Dave and Java might not agree on like the media that they like to consume all the time, but like Java really likes film and television and books, like, or books and film anyway. And like, you know what I mean? Like anyway, I'm rambling.
And Poldark.
I'm going to have
so there's some.
Yeah, I think this is a drink.
Hey.
But I agree with you, which is why my Tinder profile is the exact same as what I'm looking for in someone, which is dynamite in bed, loves Jurassic Park. End of story.
Hey, yeah.
Moving on to the next question. This one comes from, and I am so sorry in advance, I'm going to butcher this, Brynhild? Maybe. Who knows?
That sounds, looks like it could be.
The question is, do you have a movie or show that is an early relationship test, i.e., what are your deal breakers?
Yes.
And I just said mine. Mine's Jurassic Park. Like, if you haven't seen and don't like Jurassic Park, we just can't, there's like, that's a non-starter. I'm sorry.
If you haven't seen or don't like Jurassic Park, also, like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I mean, I would never say that to someone, like, directly.
Did I get that Swiss Army Man joke right?
If you don't know Jurassic Park, you don't know shit.
You don't know shit. There you go. That's like a humanity test, I think. And I agree with you. That's a good barometer, Neil. Mine is Almost Famous. I have not ever dated, since that movie came out, I have not dated a person who didn't get why that movie was very important. So that's my deal breaker.
Nice. Dave?
Man, I mean, the answer is no, because I'd like to think that there's, you know, a middle ground between me and anybody that I find attractive. Oh God, when I say it out loud, that sounds predatory.
But like, here's the deal: is like, Dave's the only one of the three of us who lives with our significant other. Right. So like, when Dave's like, "Oh, am I doing it wrong?" Like, probably not, Dave. So your spirit of compromise, I applaud.
Well, I guess the question for Dave though is like, okay, so if you show Java something, is there anything you could show her, and if she really, really didn't like it, you would be like, wait, what?
I think if I could show her seven movies from 1999 and she likes fewer than four of them, then there might be some sort of problem about how we see cinema.
So she could,
because 99, man,
99,
you got Iron Giant, yeah. Sleepy Hollow, what, American
she
Pie,
would still
American
basically
Sixth Sense, Matrix, Fight
she'd
Club.
Win the popular vote though, potentially.
Oh yeah, okay. I mean, I think just like you're allowed to like different things than me and you're allowed to have different opinions for sure, but like don't look a gift horse in the mouth and you got like such a crop. We lived through a golden age year.
For me, I think it's actually...
Everybody should know it.
I think it's 2000. Because that's almost... I think... Please write in and tell me if I'm wrong. But I think that that's Almost Famous, Royal Tenenbaums, and Oh Brother, which are like three of my all-time favorite films.
Yeah,
okay, so yours might be 1 year up. But no, yeah. I'm pretty sure mine's 99. Like Three Kings.
The Matrix.
Boys Don't Cry. Being John Malkovich. Yeah, Matrix. Blair Witch Project. Phantom Menace. Maybe not the Phantom Menace. Let's not worry about that. Eyes Wide
Don't
Shut.
Look at that one.
Yeah. Just like four movies from 1999. That's my barometer.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, hey, at least you have a barometer. I think that...
Don't write in. Royal Tenenbaums is 2001. I'm going to give myself 2000/2001.
Got it.
Basically a school year. It was a school year, which was my sophomore year of college that was very important to me.
Cool. Yeah. And I guess mine by saying Jurassic Park is really that I have no barometer because like seriously, who the fuck doesn't like Jurassic Park? Anyway,
yeah,
next question.
Nazis probably.
Definitely Nazis. And you know,
no, I've definitely shown like within this. Well, it was 2016. In 2016, I showed a couple people who had never seen Jurassic Park for the first time. Right? Like who? What life
right.
did they lead before I showed them that?
Like were they like Doogie Howser? Did they go to med school when they were like 10?
it was a really good night because we made it like a grilled cheese night. It was it was like Clever. Grilled cheese, probably grilled
oh,
cheese.
I get it. That's
and
really
Jurassic
good.
Park. Way. And then my friend Lindsay came up with another pun, which is Life Finds a Way, but way was like W-H-E-Y. Anyway, we watched Jurassic Park. We ate grilled cheese sandwiches. It was the best. And there were a couple people who had never seen it, and they didn't understand why I liked it so much. Like, I've had a lot of people be like, I don't understand why you like it so much, but I've never met someone who doesn't like Jurassic.
It's like saying, like, I don't understand why you wear clothes.
I don't understand why you breathe air.
Right.
I'm like, well, you know. And last thing I'll say, which about Jurassic Park, which is off topic. This might be the longest podcast we ever record, but Jurassic Park, my favorite movie drinking game that I ever came up with was Drunkassic Park, which is you drink every time you see a dinosaur, and it's not just a live dinosaur, it's like a dinosaur in a lunchbox or a dinosaur on a sign.
Oh my god.
You die every time, but it's so fun. So anyway, if you ever want to like die on a date, play Drunkassic Park because it's super good.
Okay.
As don't sue us when that goes badly.
All right, so next question. This is actually Game of Thrones related. This comes to us from Aaron. It's a crossover theme question for you. Although, you know, it's right up our alley. But what Aaron wants to know is what our favorite sort of non-obvious Game of Thrones couple is. Because, like, everybody's... It thinks that like Jon and Daenerys will end up together. But what is your favorite sort of like non-popular?
Does it have to be like we think it's going to happen or we would just like to see it happen? Because I'd like to see an Arya Stark Queen of the North with hot pie running her kitchens as the Lord. I think that would be.
Wait,
Hot Pie and Arya?
Arya and Hot Pie? Okay.
Wow.
Arya, so yeah.
That'd be a big win for the chubby set.
King that likes to cook. For sure. Well, maybe he's not chubby anymore. We don't know. He's been,
maybe he is,
you know, living off of ugly bread.
Okay. Mine will be, I'll also pick a Stark girl. I will say Podrick and Sansa. Because you know what? She fucking deserves it.
Yeah.
Yeah, after all of that.
After all that, she deserves a little pot.
I think that mine would be Dolorous Ed and the nice sand snake, the one with the whip, the one who's like cool, the one who's in Iron Fist.
The one who's in Iron Fist, yeah.
My favorite sand snake. I think that Dollar's Ed deserves a woman that can keep up with him and his dourness.
The good pussy. The good pussy.
Right.
Not the bad pussy.
That would be my best one. Aaron's suggestion was Team Jamie and Brienne, but I feel like that's kind of against the question. That's an obvious one. Obviously, we're in for that one.
Well, are you? Because aren't you now on Tormund and Brienne?
Ooh, yeah, you're right. That's a tough one.
I'm team Jamie and Brienne, but I believe that you are
right. I feel like
You're always Team Beard, right?
Team Jamie and Brienne is probably winning the popular vote, but Team Tormund and Brienne is winning my electoral college. So that's right. I can bring that metaphor back.
That's pretty good. Pretty good, buddy.
Okay, let's see. I've got more questions here. This is a good one from Claire. What was your worst movie date of all time? Like, what movie did you see on a bad date, or what was a bad choice, I guess, of a movie? Her example was that she watched the Gus Van Sant movie Elephant with a guy she had a crush on in college, and it was extremely depressing.
Ooh.
And that didn't work out so well. I have one, but it's not a date movie. Like, I've been pretty successful with date movies. Like, listen, you're talking to a guy here who got into a hardcore makeout sesh after taking a girl to see Surf's Up. So, like, I can make anything work. But I will say this. A bad relationship-related situation related to a movie when a friend of mine ended a very long-term relationship, and I was like, hey, let's watch High Fidelity. That was not a good idea. That did not go well, even though I love that movie.
I did that to someone, but I don't remember what the movie was. But they were like, how dare you disrespect my breakup this way? And I was like, oh, I didn't even consider it. I'm so sorry. I don't remember what it was, though, man.
Yeah.
I guess, I will pick, I guess, like, it was a first date, and it was Traffic. It was a bad first date movie, Traffic. Great movie, just not a like very like set the mood movie. That relationship ended up lasting a very long time. So, but you know, as far as like first, I don't know. What do you do in a first date? Do you go see a good movie, which Traffic is, or do you go see like a set the mood movie, which Traffic is not? So,
I think I would pick a good movie.
Yeah,
like one of my other greatest hits was Kill Bill Volume 1.
That's a
nice, that work. Yeah,
that's a great date movie. I really do feel that way.
Yeah.
Dave, question.
So my worst date movie experience is I was dating a girl in middle school, and we decided to rent and watch The Piano, which wouldn't be bad on its own, except then her mom decided she would like to watch, and then my mom decided she would like to watch, and then my girlfriend had to leave to go to a school project that she was working on. So it ended up being me, my mom, and my girlfriend's mom watching The Piano, which is horrible when you're like that sexually like weirded out teenager that I was talking about earlier in the episode. So that's definitely like the worst thing.
The boner fridge monster?
Yeah, the boner fridge monster. Mm-hmm. I had to sit through Harvey Keitel penis and lots of other weird things with the parents, both mothers. Super weird.
Why were both moms? Well, middle school. Okay. So it was like a supervised date. Because like, why were both moms in the same place?
Well, they didn't need to be. They thought they were like making like a group thing. Like, mom, we were watching it at her house. And so her mother was like, oh, maybe I'll just join you. And my mom took that as a social cue because they like to team up against us in that way. Because they knew each other and were friends otherwise. Then it became four people, and then maybe she ditched me, man. I'm going to have to talk to her later, but somehow it ended up being not my girlfriend and me and two adult women in The Piano. It's pretty horrible.
I think you win.
Yeah, I mean, that's a winner. All right, next question.
I will say, wait. Right, I will say one of like the best like unintentional sort of date movies was like a big group of us in college went to go see like a midnight screening of The Shining. And like, I don't really ascribe to that whole like take your lady to a horror movie and then she'll be freaked out and like cower against your arm. But like, I definitely did that with someone who was not my boyfriend before the movie started, but was my boyfriend, I think, by the next day. So
it worked.
The Shining. It worked. But it wasn't intent. It wasn't calculated, or as far as I know, it was not calculated or intentional. It's just like, fuck The Shining, man. That psychological horror.
That's a tough calculation, because if you overclock that and you're like, let's go see a Serbian film, then just no one's talking to you ever again.
Ugh, weirdo. All right, cool. Next question comes from Astro. And the question is, what superhero movie has the best principal romance? And his suggestion is Peter and Gwen from Amazing Spider-Man, which I guess is a recent one, but I don't know if I would necessarily call it the best. But we'll start with Joanna. Best superhero movie romance?
God, that's so hard. Because like my favorite superhero movie doesn't have a romance in it, and
I mean, I think you could go into bad superhero movies and still
right. Like you could pick Mr. and Mrs. Incredible from.
Oh, is that your answer, Neil? Go
ahead. The Incredibles. No, that's not mine. That's one. That's also not a bad. That's also not a bad one.
Anytime. Go ahead.
All right, so mine's kind of a nonsense answer, but I do want to draw attention to it, because why haven't you seen this movie if you like superhero movies? The Adam West full-length Batman movie. The Catwoman dresses up as a socialite, and Bruce Wayne doesn't realize that it's Catwoman.
Oh.
And is really flirty with her in that ridiculous way, and then tries to save her when he doesn't realize she's Catwoman. And it's all really stupid, but in terms of like me buying into a superhero romance, I didn't realize that was camp when I first saw it. So it left an indelible mark on me.
Was that Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, or Eartha Kitt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Julie Newmar.
My answer is the same but different, which is Batman and Catwoman and Batman Returns.
Oh, God.
Michael Keaton. Yeah, that's the best one. Come on, that's the best one.
Well, I always pick that one because I'm kind of a sadist, and Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman is sort of right up my alley.
Oh, she's so good. I'm gonna watch that movie when this is over. P.S. this is another spoiler for listeners. We're probably gonna do a full on Batman episode in the future, just so you guys know.
I mean, yeah, prepare, why not?
So. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
When's the question in the episode where I get to ring up somebody sewn into leather pants, because you guys both got to do it already?
No, that's like, it's definitely vinyl. It's like it's a raincoat, so it's vinyl. It's not leather.
I was just trying to make intersectionality across the callback.
You are technically
correct.
I am technically correct.
Is it weird that my answer to this is probably Steve Rogers and Peggy Carter, because it's super dark? Like, he's friends with her when she's old and then she dies.
I was like scouring Captain America, the best one. What is the best
Winter Soldier?
Oh, yeah, Bucky and Steve. There you go. Bucky and Steve. Captain America Winter Soldier, because it's my favorite superhero movie by freaking far. And I'll go with Bucky and Steve, or Bucky and his like workplace bromance with Black Widow. Why not?
Okay, next one is from Abby, and this is a two-parter, and I think I have some answers for this one. Where can a single 42-year-old lady meet a great guy her age who appreciates geek culture, and what are some geeky pickup lines that she can use in her Tinder/Bumble profile to attract a like-minded guy?
Oh,
this is awesome.
This is a great question.
We're going to find... Yes, okay. Right.
I'm thinking, okay, so let's start with the places. Where could you go to meet geeky dudes who are single.
Would you not go to your local con? Like, you go to Comic-Con,
like, sure.
But what about a local con?
Well, yeah, like a local Comic-Con, like a Wizard World.
Yeah.
For sure there. I would say you're going to have a retail center for whatever your thing is still, basically anywhere in America. Video store,
comic book store,
gaming store, comic book store. Mm. Those places are going to have events that are going to draw in people that are less likely to show up to full-on cosplay events. So unless you're like super into cosplay, I would definitely do that. Geeks Who Drink.
That was one of mine.
What I would.
Nice.
Yeah, I would roll into that as soon as possible if you have somewhere near there. And then also with, like, the way like huge media events happen these days, like I want to say that you're going to have some sort of a media event that's going to be close enough to you, like a Harry Potter book release or a Star Wars product drop or something, where you're going to find some people that maybe don't venture directly to, you know, your huge con centers, which I agree should be your first stop.
I agree. I would also suggest nerdy film festivals like Fantastic Fest, or smaller film festivals. Like, there's one in Colorado, the one they have at the Stanley, or had at the Stanley. Isn't it the Stanley Film Festival?
The Stanley Film Festival, which I think is coming back
next year.
But the people that did it are now in Oregon at the Overlook Film Festival, if you are
in
Oregon.
But there are all kinds of cool regional film festivals you can go to.
Yeah, and then I also want to give out a shout-out to a very predictable response, which would be, like, online. Like, message boards, which are not all garbage fires. I have known many a successful relationship and marriage to come out of this beautiful, beautiful website called Vajiba.com. That's the best comment section on the web. Sorry, Film School Rejects.
Oh, no. And Film School Rejects comment section is garbage.
Yeah.
Vajiba is where I go to comment.
I would say the comment section of Vajiba.com. But seriously, like,
yeah, that is very specific. Where could a single 42-year-old leader meet a great guy who age appreciates geek culture? Vajiba.com should be a banner.
I mean, it should be. The site has gotten a little bit more political than it used to. So, like, it's a little more politically bent than it used to be geek bent. But, like, I still feel like you'll find very smart, very interesting, and very lovely people in the comment section of Vajiba.com. So,
well, I don't want to make any assumptions about Abby, but if Abby does decide to be politically active in some sort of way, there's a great way of saying that you're a geek and a political opinion in the way that you represent yourself at, like, a protest or like a gathering, where you might also find somebody whose greater interests overlap with yours.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of nerdy people.
Yeah, well,
one thing that I was sort of disappointed in, that I was out of town for the Women's March. Because I was like, man, the Women's March, that's where I need to go.
Where the ladies are going to be at.
Don't tell me this. This is like the guys in college who are like, I'll take women's
March. No. It's not as predatory as that. It's like, I would go have a clever sign, hang out with cool people, and you'd never know.
It's true. You never know. And, like, I know that you wouldn't be there, like, disingenuously. Like,
no, I actually... just at Sundance.
He's not a wedding crasher.
No. No.
Although... weddings. No, don't do weddings.
Abby, don't do weddings. Go to Vajiba.com.
All right, so let's help Abby with the other part of her question, which is good pickup lines for Tinder/Bumble. I feel like there's a Patronus joke in here somewhere.
Yeah, it really depends on Abby's, like, area of geek expertise. I was trying to make that a portmanteau. It didn't go. Geek expertise.
Wait, hold on. I feel like there's part of this email that I didn't put in my notes that actually does give us Abby's area of expertise. Give me 2 seconds and I will find it.
Oh, cool. I can attempt to be specific, or it's going to be something.
Specific areas of interest include Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Star Wars, Tolkien, and the Narnia Chronicles.
Oh God. I got
everybody. Everybody's gonna be into all your shit.
I got your one ring right here.
Ooh, but that might be a little strong. That's coming on a little strong.
Yeah, it goes
in a
straight
Tinder
into
profile.
I mean, hit me. What? I got your wardrobe right here. I don't know.
I've been able to turn some heads in public by accioing things to me. just that, you know, little code words you could use. I don't know if like accio date is, works though. That's like not quite as zingy as I'd want for a pickup line.
Just looking, you know, for my just
get him
looking
to accio a beer.
Here's the Game of Thrones one. Just looking for my Tormund in a sea of one ones. Sorry, one one. Or just looking for my Jon Snow in a sea of Ramses. You know.
I love you like a brother if I'm a Lannister. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's awful. Winter. I mean, winter's not the only thing that's coming. Is also A, very brash, and B, done to death. So don't do that, Abby. Go to pajama.com and hang out in the comment section. I swear to God, Dustin's not paying me.
Just be like, swipe right if you would take a vacation to Dorne, because literally only Game of Thrones people would ever know what that is. And I would probably swipe right on that, like, be like, yes, I would.
But who isn't a Game of Thrones fan at this point? Like, I
that's
like
true.
I think we have to lean into like Abby's niche, like more niche interests. Which I mean, she's got all
the like Harry Potter, the niche Harry Potter world.
No, like maybe niche Narnia. Like, you know, like I don't know. Never mind. I'm grasping.
I'm sure she
for
could
like
put
a
whole bunch of stuff together. I'm just trying to think about like how niche do you go into Narnia, right? Because if you're doing like a Silver Chair reference, nobody's getting that.
But like we could,
read it and I'm not. It's like at the tip of my brain.
You could do like a Turkish Delight reference.
Ooh.
Oh yeah,
people might be weird
something about a dawn treader.
Yeah,
but then you have to be like getting towards the dawn. Maybe
just
I don't
looking
know.
For my Prince Caspian in a sea of Aslans.
You like this looking for my in a sea of.
That's good, but then like then I'm like
you
yeah.
have to be brief. It's
there
like
there is
Tinder.
Also a Caspian Sea, so then my brain just fritzes with knowledge.
Looking for my bill in a sea of disappointing Weasleys. So, I don't know.
Looking for my bill in a sea of Teds.
I think that just a Hermione looking for her Ron is a pretty good one.
I feel like our listeners should like drop suggestions on at Storm of Spoilers Twitter feed.
Yeah, let's all help Abby out.
Yeah.
With
let's geeky pickup lines at Storm of Spoilers right now. We'll be retweeting
yes.
them.
Yeah.
Geeky let's pickup lines, we'll do that. Okay. Let's see. I have another Game of Thrones one from Corey.
Let's do it.
Which basically boils down to, do you think that if forced to be together forever, Sansa and Tyrion would have ever been happy?
Yes.
I do, too.
Yes. Sooner rather than later, I think.
Because Sansa would have realized that he's not such a bad dude. Do you think they could still end up together?
No.
Well, what if Jon sells her off?
But I think...
No.
No. Yeah, well. I tried.
Yeah, I think if any point if Sansa was able to like get the slightest degree of trust, that Tyrion would have been able to take that a long way.
Yeah,
maybe out completely out of the city from the same city from his sister, if you know things would have gone a different way.
And like even if they never even consummated, and he kept Shay on the side as like his whatever, and also Sansa's like best friend and maid, like that's like a happy little trio. Like I feel like they would have been happy together, whether or not they would have ever been like, you know, because she's so young, and Tyrion felt like weird and gross about it, and I respect him for that. So
nice. All right, I got one more, and this is an interesting one because it is a social justice warrior related question.
So this is for you, Dave.
Okay.
For Dave, obviously. So this is from Kat. Kat says she is a big-time social justice warrior / activist. I can't imagine why she'd be into our show. And has somehow fallen in love with a guy who is not, and teases her about being too sensitive about things. In his opinion, people who are offended at every little thing need to suck it up, because none of it really matters in the end. And in her opinion, hurt feelings matter, and we all need to do our part to make sure the world is a good place. So she wants to know how maybe she could get to a middle ground. How does she help him kind of loosen up to maybe not making so many offensive jokes? How does she communicate with someone like that about stuff like that's important, like women's rights? And this is a really interesting conversation, because it's one of those things like, kind of, how do you talk to somebody who's sort of so askew of where you're at? And I think you could apply this to a lot of different things these days. So, yes, let's start with Dave. What advice would you give to Kat?
Yes, Dave, our social justice warrior.
He thinks that these certain things don't matter, and that you're being too sensitive with some of your social justice warrior ways. You, of course, are respecting that that might be valid, because you're coming from the more open-minded opinion here. So how do we, you know, get through without butting heads? So really, you're trying to get him into a position, which is what we're all trying to get, like, people in our lives to do, of realizing what, like, realizing you have privileges. I don't really like checking people's privilege, because I don't think anybody can be told necessarily how they're privileged as much as they're trying to figure out, like, why. I guess the good question is try to figure out what if he could specifically, he. Yes, she says white man. We didn't say that on air. It's a,
oh, yeah, sorry. I was trying to summarize.
I just didn't want to gender anything that hadn't been specifically gendered. Try to make him figure out that if you're both getting angry, you should be presenting why you're getting angry very clearly. He should present why he's frustrated. Somebody having a negative reaction to something that you don't say is, I feel, the only reason you're having a reaction about that is it's awakening something in you. That's occasionally how I've been able to discover ways that I've been privileged and been able to better communicate that is, like, if somebody takes a show that I didn't watch off the air and for business reasons I didn't understand and it weren't part of me, but I'm still upset. That's upsetting something in me, which is my, natural humanity realizing that something I took for granted is now gone through it without my control. And there are minority groups throughout the world, though, that's happening to all the time, and they're constantly feeling that discomfort. So if you could pinpoint what is making him so uncomfortable about talking about these things, I think you'll be able to find the privilege. And then once you find the privilege, once again, me and my girlfriend like to argue about this sort of stuff a lot, so maybe not for everybody. But once you are, then you're going to be able to find what the middle ground discussion actually is. If him, you know, growing up his specific way, or that if he felt like something was taken away from him by some sort of unjust rule that he felt was, like, PC-based. There's a lot of unjust rules on both sides of the thing, and it sounds like from your question, you are very concerned with other people's feelings and whatnot. So I would just say investigate the wound and don't worry so much about necessarily fixing it. So you could get in a long discussion about whether or not comedians are allowed to joke about certain things and still walk away with that having different opinions, but at least you both have stated your opinions and you're both taking that into account in your future interactions, which is not a simple answer, but I don't think there is one unless someone wants to save me.
No, I mean, I think that's a great answer. I really do. I haven't dated someone who didn't align with my political views since college. So my reaction to that might have been more immature. But, like, I mean,
oh, it's like my reaction. I can say the immature reaction. Because my initial reaction to this question is, well, like, Twitter gave you a block button, life gave you a dump button.
Oh God, that's a lot.
I know.
A lot, Neil.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, you could also do that. Just tell him he has strikes. Like, Neil's right.
But I'm...
You train dogs with positive and
I'm also pro-bubble, so you really...
Well, a friend of mine who went to the Women's March with me did not tell her boyfriend where she was going. She just said, I'm hanging out with, like, these friends of mine. And because she was like, he would just give me endless shit, and I didn't want to hear it. And, like, that was just so amazing to me that, like, you would be with someone that you, like, couldn't tell that you were, like, doing this, right? And then she's like, yeah, but he'll figure it out. And I was like, why? She was like, well, he considers you my bra-burning feminist friend. And I was like, I don't consider myself that, but okay. So anyways, that's, like, my friend.
That's not even my wave of feminism, she protested.
I mean, seriously, I enjoy my bras. I want to keep them. So, like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. All I will say is that, like, when I was in college, the immature way I dealt with it is, like, this guy, the thing I remember is, like, this guy would make jokes that weren't, like, homophobic, but they were kind of homophobic. And I would make fun of him for that. And then he got very upset that I considered him homophobic. And, like, that was just, like, a really interesting conversation to me because, like, what came out of me making fun of him for being homophobic is like him not realizing that that's how he presented to anyone in the world. And like us having a conversation about like my bar versus him, his bar of homophobia. And you know, it made me realize that that was not the approach I should have taken, which is like making fun of someone. I should have just been like, can we talk about this thing that you do? You know, that being said, there are certainly like examples of people who get along who do not share the same political or social outlooks, and they have plenty of other things in common. So I can only hope that you have plenty of other things in common with this person, like sex is dynamite or you like the same TV or whatever it is. Those are the two things.
Dynamite in bed likes Jurassic Park.
Yeah, if they're dynamite in bed and like Jurassic Park, but don't understand why you would want to go to Women's March. Like maybe, you know, just make sure that there's enough common ground that the uncommon ground is worth like discussing and, you know, fighting to find a middle ground, you know?
Well, and there's also,
don't get discouraged. He's the white man. So this is the hardest of fights. Continue.
But there's also, there's degrees of it, you know, and there's the people that think other people are too sensitive, but at heart they really, you know, are. I wouldn't call them allies, I mean, like, but they're not bad people. But then there's like people who are just bad people.
Yeah, I just took two very strong tequila shots, so this is where I'm gonna decide to agree with Neil and say, if he voted for Trump, you must dump.
Dump button.
That's my slogan.
I will say,
but if it's a milder case, then we can talk about it. But if they voted for Trump, it's sort of like the John Waters quote, right? Like if you go to someone's house and they don't have books, don't have sex with them. Like someone voted for Trump. You voted for Trump, but like if someone voted for Trump, I don't think you should have sex with them. I think you should Lysa Strata their ass. And that's the tequila talking, but.
But it's interesting when you talk about when I say there are degrees of this, because, you know, like I have family and I experienced this when I went home over the holidays, family that probably voted for Trump, but like aren't bad people. They just were confused or whatever. But you always want to start, like I always try and start from a place of agreement or understanding. Like, let's start with something we agree on, like men and women are equal. Or should be equal, you know, like find something you can agree on and sort of build out from there. And I guess, yeah, you'll know soon enough, I guess. It is one of those things that like there comes a point, and she mentioned in the email, specifically being in love, there comes a point in a relationship where you have to start turning your eyes toward the long distance future. And these things do totally matter. Like if you're not aligned on like religion or general politics, like, yeah, like how would you raise your children if you don't agree on stuff? So,
Yeah, or if you're building a relationship around not talking about those things, it's just as problematic.
Right. So, you know, be open and honest. And I'm sure whatever was going to happen is going to happen. I mean, we've all seen Battlestar Galactica. There's a plan, the universe. It's just...
You could give him a litmus test right now and see if he has any good geek pickup lines, and if there are any really hilariously non-offensive ones that we retweet, maybe give him a few more weeks.
Wait, do we have another question we can ask?
Nope.
No, but do we?
Wait, do we?
No other questions?
Did I miss one?
Can you come up with one? Hold on one second. Diana!
We're going to have a guest answer?
Yeah. Do you want to come here and like be a guest on my podcast for a second, Diana?
Let's have Joanna's a random guesting answer this Catherine question.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I did miss one.
It'll be less than 10 minutes. Come here.
It's not about birth control, though.
It's okay.
It's not about birth control.
Guys, Drunk Joanna's really fun on the podcast.
Yeah.
Wait, come here. Yeah, I have to feel it. Come here. Here, have an earbud. We're doing Valentine's Day romance advice Q&A podcast, mailbag podcast.
Okay.
All right, and so this is our last question. I did miss one, but it's a very important question from Catherine, and she would like us to settle an argument between her husband and her that's been going on apparently for years. He insists that The Lord of the Rings is a better book series than the Harry Potter book series. She's read both, and she thinks Harry Potter is better. They both love our show, and they respect our opinion, which is better as a book series.
Do you want me to settle this argument?
Because if we try to settle it, it'll never end.
Oh, okay. It's never gonna happen. I'm your cover. I get it. Well, if I'm being honest, I think Harry Potter is the better series.
Oh.
But the reason is that Lord of the Rings is a little stuffy and inaccessible, and Harry Potter was kind of beloved by both children and adults. So I think if we are talking about the spirit of love, then we must go with dear Harry, whose message reaches across age gaps.
So thematically relevant.
Damn, that's a good answer.
It's a good answer.
I would go as far as to say that's the correct answer.
Don't give them my home address or my phone number. I don't want to be responsible for any kind of divorce.
All the golems are going to come up for you.
Dave, what would be your answer?
I mean, I guess Harry Potter book series, but only if you're not actually trying to come up with melodies for all the Elvish songs you're reading, which could actually make parts of Lord of the Rings pass longer if you keep with that part of the oral tradition. But yeah, Lord of the Rings, great world building. Harry Potter, great plot. If we want to talk about whether the Silmarillion or Horcruxes are better thought out, completely different discussion, but I think in terms of a series of books, Harry Potter. Yeah, I would go with Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. All right, Neil?
Yeah, I think the accessibility argument is a really strong one, because I don't even find the Lord of the Rings movies accessible, let alone those damn books. So, Harry Potter for sure, and I'm not even that big of a Harry Potter fan.
All right, I'm going to be the like voice of dissent and say Lord of the Rings.
If you must.
because they are snooty and inaccessible. You have to work harder for Lord of the Rings.
That's not what I'm here for. I'm not here to work hard.
Well, I'm here to work hard. So
relationships aren't supposed to be work.
I know. You guys all probably have the right answer, but I just thought I would like lodge the voice of dissent. And I actually do believe it. I think the Lord of the Rings are the better books, but all of your arguments about why Harry Potter is sort of like the better metaphor for love and communication and bonding makes sense.
I mean, do we want to get really geeky about it? Can you lance a book out of there?
Can I lance a
pick? Oh,
one
okay.
One book? Are we going to do
one book out of the
book?
Possible? What, 10 total books?
Yeah.
Because you know what, you might win me back if you could make an argument that we could go book by book, because there's a lot of chaff in the back half of Harry Potter that, and a whole second book that I could maybe do without. So if you're saying like maybe,
yeah, bang for your buck,
maybe we're a fellowship or a return of the king, maybe I'm swayable.
Right? Cause like,
maybe I need my constituents to call in 23,000
like,
times.
Half-Blood Prince, like that book can just go to hell and I'd be okay.
There
with
wasn't,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, we need a fifth or whichever one it was.
Yeah. So the question
not
is.
The right person to ask. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
If you plow through Lord of the Rings and like, maybe it's more rewarding to actually finish Lord of the Rings. And that should give it a little bit more plussing on like the side, because you are going through everything. Like it's like reading Half-Blood Prince 7 times.
But I will say that this couple versus maybe some other couples that we've dealt with on this podcast, like they're okay. You're okay.
Yeah, I mean, because, if this is your fight, then I think you're fine.
If one loves Lord of the Rings and one loves Harry Potter, like you're okay. Versus like, you know. The people who...
No, this is going to crack right down the middle. Right. Once they're like, how does logic apply to magic in your universe? Mm. They're going to be like, what? You flick your wrist wrong? And they're going to be like, what? The little crystal ball just shows you whatever you want? And then, you know, then you're just screwed.
I imagine they enjoy that argument. I think they're two happy nerds joyously defending their encampments and then, like, sleeping with the enemy every night. I think they're really happy. Good.
Ooh, that's very dangerous and sexy. Yeah. Yeah. I like it,
yep. Isn't it?
They're gonna make their Horcruxes in each other.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow, we missed with blue.
There's
I
a lot
like
of
it.
Patronus action jokes going on.
Thank you so much, Diana, for being our guest on this segment.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. It's delightful.
Yeah, where can we find more Diana before she has to go?
If you want to listen to more Diana, you could listen to the podcast. This Isn't New. At This Isn't New. Listen to her.
There's a birth control episode. That's what I know.
Yeah, there is a birth control episode.
With Joanna. So there you go.
It's true.
Cool. All right. I've exhausted the list of questions that I wrote down.
We did it.
Apologies to those we didn't get to. We're gonna see if Joanna wants to drunkenly email you guys back.
I might. I've had tequila. I've got fire. Yeah. I've got tequila fire in my belly.
So, you never know.
She's got that answering fire. She's got fire
don't
and answers.
Don't lose hope.
I will take back this realm with fire and answers. Absolutely.
And Neil, thank you so much for doing our primary sorting for that episode.
Hey,
as
listen,
always,
I enjoyed reading
great.
Those emails, even the weird ones. So thanks.
And next week, I know we're doing something that you proposed and we were all totally into. What's up next week on Storm of Spoilers?
Next week we are going to the land. Well, I guess we could say we're going into the Matrix, because that's,
I would say we're going to San Dimas.
San Dimas. We very may well be. We may also be getting into a phone booth and traveling through time and space.
Find ourselves on the rocky shores of Point Break.
For a bodacious...
We've been leaving Easter eggs the whole episode.
Yes. We are going to be celebrating, nay, worshipping the Keanu-sance, which you've heard of the McConaissance, which is fine.
Yeah, I guess.
But the Keanu Reeves revolution is upon us. In fact, to the degree that a website that I run, filmschoolrejects.com, did an article this week called the Mount Rushmore of Hollywood Action Stars, where we put Keanu on the Mount Rushmore of action stars.
In which slot?
He's the slot? Fourth. The one all the way to the right. I don't know which one. We didn't get that deep. But it was John Wayne, Tom Cruise, Keanu, and someone else.
Wow.
Oh, that would be the Roosevelt spot. Not important.
Oh, Harrison Ford. John Wayne, Tom Cruise, Harrison Ford, and Keanu Reeves.
Interesting.
Yeah, really fascinating.
Fascinating.
Also, fuck Bruce Willis.
You guys,
man, he only had one decade worth of chances.
That's true.
He squandered it.
I guess so. Can we bring our own Mount Rushmore?
Yes.
To next week's episode.
We absolutely can. It's a great starting point. Right. We're going to talk Keanu. We're going to talk John Wick, and John Wick 2, which is great. Y'all should go see it so we can talk spoilers next week. And
Thumbsucker.
And Thumbsucker.
A lesser known Keanu.
And yeah, we're going to go deep on Keanu and his many, many ways that he delivers very simple dialogue. So that's going to be super fun. Also, programming notes for the next couple of weeks. The week after, we're doing some Matt Damon-y things across the sea. And then the week after that, you're going to want to make sure that you are caught up on anything X-Men related, because we're going to be talking X-Men things. So there's your look ahead into the next couple of weeks of our off-season tour.
Spoilers for the spoiler show. That's goddamn amazing. Guys, where can we find more of your work? On the internet. Until next week, Miss Two Shots Tequila, Joanna Robinson.
You can find me at Dave Ruined the Edit Split or VanityFair.com.
Oh, that comes back up after tequila. Make one mistake in the calendar year.
VanityFair.com. A Little Gold Men, which is my Oscar season podcast, which is really heating up. And Gen Pop, which this week we talked to Matt Zollersites about 24.
Ooh, which came back after the Super Bowl. I did not watch it because I just turned it off after that. But there you go.
It's a tough weekend. Yeah,
I guess.
Good game regardless, right?
Yeah. I was rooting for the side of not evil, so didn't work out.
So say we all. Neil, where can people find more of your work?
Yes.
Besides what we've already covered?
Yeah, I feel like I've name-checked filmschoolrejects.com a bunch, but we got a bunch of good content this week. I actually wrote things, so you should check that out. You can also follow me at Rejects on Twitter. You can follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. Email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. If you email us your favorite pickup lines, geeky Tinder pickup lines, we will tweet them out and credit you. Also, do not forget that we are competing for surveys, wondery.com/survey, where you can take a survey. I'm sure it only takes a couple minutes. I haven't taken this one yet. And then it'll help us defeat other people. And yeah, I feel like that's my whole list.
Perfect. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at @itda7e. You could find my podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com. You could find my Stranger Things season 2 trailer breakdown at thrillist.com. You can, of course, find the show at achildishannoyingthingtodo.com and lastpagesofgreatbooks.com. And until next week, I guess have good arguments with each other. And, you know,
and then,
be nice.
And then spend every night sleeping with the enemy.
Theme from Rocky. The theme from Speed. They all end with me wishing that I was Keanu Reeves. Cause Keanu is sweet, Keanu is strong. He'll fuck y'all shit up if you try to tell him he was wrong.